यभूमाव असफात्नम रिद्धाम राजाम सुरानाम अपिचाधिपत्याम। I can find no means to drive away this grief which is drying up my senses. I will not be able to dispel it, even if I win a prosperous, unrivaled kingdom on earth with sovereignty like the demigods in heaven. Report by Srila Prabhupada. Although Arjuna was putting forward so many arguments based on knowledge of the principles of religion and moral codes, it appears that he was unable to solve his real problems without the help of the spiritual master, Lord Sri Krishna. We are reading this evening from the second chapter of Srimad Bhagavad Gita. The stage of Bhagavad Gita was set by the arrangement of the Supreme Lord in such a way that he could preach to all human civilization for all time to come. After all, Arjuna was already an intimate friend of the Lord and a liberated soul. But he appeared in such a way that he was in the same condition that everyone is put in within this material existence. Arjuna is representing all human society. And the problems that he is presenting to Lord Krishna is the problems that we all face in our life, whether we recognize it or not today. In due course of time, it will reveal itself quite evidently. Arjuna was standing on a battlefield, and there was good on one side and evil on the other, the Kurus and the Pandavas. All of us within this world, both within and out, we are faced with this decision of what to do. Within society, there are those saintly and pious people who are always encouraging us to do the right thing, to elevate our consciousness, to live a pure life, to give hope to ourselves, hope to our families, and hope to others through the process of yoga or reconnecting us with God. And then there is that element within the society that is constantly trying to drag us to the platform of exploitation. That you have come to this world, you should enjoy. And of course, the propaganda of trying to convince you to enjoy is only to make you such a consumer that other people can exploit you. In this way, there is so propaganda. You eat, you drink, you be merry. Tomorrow may never come. And we are standing between these two influences within our society. And within our own hearts, the spirit soul is within the heart. Ultimately, Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that the real truth is to understand that you are the eternal soul, the Atma, which is pure, which is part and parcel of the Supreme Soul. This body and the senses and even the mind itself are gross and subtle forms of temporary garments or dresses that the soul wears. And at the time of death, we change those dresses according to our activities, according to our desires. Within this life, we prepare ourselves in the next for a different body. But what are the needs of the soul? On one hand, the soul its inherent nature is good. It is pure. It is God conscious. It is Satchit Ananda, eternal, full of knowledge and full of bliss. But the soul is covered by the mind. And this mind is so much influenced by the conditionings around us. We have greed. We have pride. We have burning sensual desires. We have envy toward others. We are always aspiring for prestige, for more and more acquisition. Even sometimes there is hatred, there is cruelty, there is illusion, there is anger when our desires are unfulfilled. So we have our godly nature and our godless nature within us. So this battlefield of Kurukshetra is both within and without. And we, like Arjuna, are standing between the two armies. And Arjuna is explaining to Krishna in this particular verse that we are reading today that even though he is such a learned scholar, and even he has taken birth in the highest of all families, the family of the Pandavas, which means he and his brothers are the heirs for the kingdom of the whole world. Such great wealth, such great prestige. But he's telling Krishna that even if we win this war, even if we have unrivaled sovereignty or control over the entire planet Earth as the kings, and all of society are our subjects, this will not dispel my ignorance. This will not dry up the grief, the anxiety, the frustrations that are in my heart. And this is reality. No material arrangements can make anyone truly happy in this world. It has never happened in the past throughout history, and it will never happen in the future. Real happiness can never be on the basis of satisfying this mind and senses. Why? Krishna explains in Gita, Yehi samsparshaja bhoga dhuka jonaya evate. Because it is all temporary. You, the soul, are eternal. The soul is expecting eternal. Real joy. The soul is searching, longing for pure love. And it will never be satisfied with anything but eternal joy and eternal love. And this body, everything is changing. Today and tomorrow, everything will be taken away. You cannot hold on to it. It is inevitable. If we're trying to hold on to something we love and it is taken away, we should not blame God. Because God tells us in the first place, don't be attached to these things because it will be taken away. You have by your own free will come to this world of birth and death, and everything is subject to birth and death. It is like if the parent tells the child, do not take drugs, or you will be unhappy. And then the child goes and takes drugs and ruins his life and then blames the parent. Why did you ruin my life? And the parent will say, if you listen to me, your life would not be ruined. So our life is always subjected to misery. Kamala dala jala jivana talamala. Just like a drop of water appears on a lotus leaf for a moment and then it drops away, that is the condition of all of our so-called securities in this world. There is no real security. In the United States of America, which is considered by many to be a very prosperous, advanced nation in materialism, when my father was young, there were so many big, big people making so much money, and then one day, the stock market crashed. It was not anybody's purposeful will, at least the common man. And then the multimillionaires became poverty-stricken. They had nothing. My father tells me of one person he knew. He was a multimillionaire. And the next day after the stock market crashed, he was going through garbage cans looking for potato peels to eat. There was nothing. And people were so frustrated that thousands of people were jumping off buildings and jumping off bridges to commit suicide because they were in so much anxiety. Who understands what is happening like this? This material world is a place of uncertainty. There is no security. There is no guarantee. And even the wealthiest people, the most famous wealthy persons of the West, the Rockefellers, the Gettys, the most miserable people you'll ever understand. Mr. Getty, he had so many ulcers and so much terrible, terrible frustrations that his mind was always disturbed, his health was terrible. He could only eat barley water. Little children who are coming to your car in Bombay, wiping your windows and knocking on the window and saying, bakshish, bakshish, you give them some laddu and they eat it very nicely. But Mr. Getty, who was the number one wealthiest man in the world at the time, multi-billionaire, he could not eat such a laddu. He couldn't even enjoy that much. He couldn't even enjoy as much as a beggar in the street. So what is the use of being multi-billionaire? And Mr. Rockefeller, he was so proud that his son was getting a PhD, and in his thesis he went to some country and he was eaten by the people of that country. He was killed and eaten. True. And he said, all my wealth, all of my power, all of my prestige, I'll never find happiness because my son is dead. And we have Mr. Kennedy. He was young, he was handsome, he had a beautiful wife, he had wonderful children, he had the highest position in all society, the chief executive head of the United States of America, the most powerful nation on the planet. And a rare thing, most of the country actually loved him. These days, nobody loves the presidents or the leaders, very rare. Now the people somehow tolerate the president. But Kennedy was the last president in America that the nation loved. And he was riding in his car and waving, and everyone was going, not kijai, but whatever they say in America. And he was happy, he was waving, and they were smiling, and their hearts were filled with joy seeing the idol of their life, the leader of their life. And then a bullet comes, one crazy man. Who was behind it? There are so many theories, but whatever it is, everything was finished in a second. And his poor wife, who was the happiest, most prestigious, most prosperous woman in the world, she became a miserable widow. And he had the CIA, and he had the FBI, and he had the United States Marine Corps, the Navy, the Air Force. Everyone was there to protect him. But he was not able to be saved from the inevitable. And then there was Mr. Nixon. He made one mistake, torn down, completely stripped of all prestige, of all pride, and he's made to be a villain for the rest of history. But the day before, he was the greatest, most popular man in the world. So what makes us think that there's any security in trying to be happy in this material world? History repeats itself again and again and again and again and again. It doesn't matter whether you're good, it doesn't matter whether you're bad, you're going to suffer. If you're bad, you'll suffer more. If you're good, you'll enjoy more, but in the end, you suffer anyway. Krishna says in Gita, Abrahma bhuvana loka punaravartanorjana mamupetyatu kontiya punarajanmana vidyate. The most pious, charitable, nice people go to Brahmaloka, the highest heavenly planet. And the most sinful people, they go to Patala Loka, lowest hellish existence. But Krishna says, certainly you suffer more if you're in a hellish condition. Sin means pain. Piety means pleasure. But in the end, it's all temporary. And in the end, you have to suffer losing everything. In the end, you have to grow old, you have to get diseased, and you have to die, whoever you are. Whether you're living in a castle, or whether you are living on the street. Whether you're living in a heavenly planet, or whether you're living in the ocean. This is the nature of this world. So Krishna tells us from the beginning that my love, my mercy for you, is I am coming to teach you the Bhagavad Gita, to explain to you the real treasure that is within your own heart. The real treasure is your own soul. The natural qualities that you have inherited from God. You are full of bliss. You are beyond birth, beyond death, beyond all the limitations of this temporary existence. And the purpose of this human form of life is specifically to realize that happiness that we are all longing for. We are all longing for love. Love is the greatest power on earth. Where there is love, a person is willing to do anything. The love between a mother and a child, the love between a father and a child, the love one may have for the friend or for the nation. Where there is love, people are willing to risk and give their lives. Because love is the greatest pleasure in this world. And the soul is longing, searching for love. But real love is when the soul reunites with the Supreme Soul, with God, with Krishna. Because that is the natural, original situation for every soul to enjoy. And human form of life is meant for self-realization. Not only theoretical understanding, but direct experience and realization of the supreme truth, which is within the heart of you and me, and which is revealed according to the degree our minds are purified. Purification is the real duty of every human being. We have so many duties, and Krishna tells us in the Bhagavad Gita, Chaturvarnamayastristam guna karma vibhagasha, that according to our different propensities, according to our previous karma in the past, and according to the qualities we have at this time due to those previous karmas of the past, we have certain inclinations. And therefore, he has arranged this Varnashram system of four Varnas, Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, and four Ashrams, Brahmachari, Grihastha, Vanaprastha, and Sannyas, so that everyone, according to their nature, can perfect their lives. It is not a question of the caste system that has somehow or other been deteriorated to in India today, where somebody is of a high caste and they're thinking, I am better than you. You should serve me. And the lower castes are thinking, feeling unprotected and exploited. This type of caste system is a complete perversion. It is a deviation. Krishna explains that the social body is like the body we have. Every part of the body is working together to serve the interest of the whole body. It's not that one part of the body says, I'm better than you. You get down. We have a head. The function of the head is to give direction in the service of the whole body. The function of the arms is to take and to give and to protect. The function of the stomach is to nourish. The function of the legs is to carry. Do we think that my arms are better than my legs, or my belly is better than my head? We don't even consider these things. We only consider that every part is necessary for my body to function properly. Let them all work together. And if they all work together in the proper direction, the whole body becomes happy, prosperous, and reaches a good destination. Similarly, Krishna has scientifically arranged society in such a way that everyone, according to their nature, due to their previous karma, they can all perfect their lives if they perform their duties in a spirit of knowledge and devotion. If they all understand where they are and where they're meant to go, and who they are and who they are meant to meet in their life. And this is the most important form of education. And this is the greatest problem in society, is people have no real spiritual direction or understanding. People, they come together to raise a family with the same mentalities as the hogs and the dogs raise their families. They find a place to stay, they provide food, and their children find mates, and then they have grandchildren, and then their grandchildren provide mates, and there's great-grandchildren, and this made, there's dynasties of hogs and dogs. They may not be very sophisticated, but basically they're just trying to enjoy and to defend themselves, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But human civilization is meant that if you have a family, you understand what is the real duty of human life, and you pursue the duty of life with your family. You have a home, make your home a temple. Train your children by your example how to love God, how to serve God, how to hear the truth in a humble state of mind from those who know the truth, from those who are speaking from the scriptures. In this way, we can actually make our family an ashram. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he was a grihastha. He worked for the British government as a magistrate, and he had 10 children. And yet, even the greatest Babajis and Sannyasis would come and touch his feet and beg him to teach them how to love God and how to know God. People who have renounced everything are coming to a man with a wife and 10 children and bowing down and saying, please give me direction. Please give me your blessings. Why? Because his home was the spiritual world. The greatest saints and sages would come to his home because they wanted to experience the atmosphere of the spiritual world, Vaikuntha. Because everyone in his family was so humbly devoted to the service of the Lord and was so charitably disposed toward enlightening others. And one of his sons, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was our Param Guru, he became the greatest renunciate of the day. And he served in the same way as his father, according to his nature. He was a sannyasi, a swami. And he lived identically to his father, in spirit, in purpose, according to his nature. So whatever our disposition may be in society, we should never think I am better or I am worse than another. We should always be thinking simply how we can help others and help ourselves to achieve the fulfillment of the aim of life. The aim of life is to come beyond the temporary network of material complexities. The aim of life is to realize our eternal identity and to act according to that identity. Our identity is that we are the eternal servants of the Supreme God, Krishna, and to utilize our life in that service is the perfection of our existence. The beginning of spiritual life is to come to the platform that Arjuna is revealing in this verse that we are studying today. We must understand and humble ourselves to admit that I am an illusion. And we must approach the Supreme Lord through the scriptures and through those great souls who are revealing the truths of the scriptures, and we must inquire from them. Arjuna began his conversation with Krishna by telling Krishna what is right and what is wrong. He was actually speaking so much good logic and so much good philosophy. And everything he was saying was full of wisdom. But as he was speaking, he was becoming more and more miserable. So Arjuna finally said to Krishna, "What is the use of all of this fancy words that I am speaking when I'm miserable? I don't know who I am or what I'm doing. I'm an illusion. And I'm subjected to so much suffering. Please instruct me." In Srimad Bhagavatam, we find a very similar story. Devahuti, she was the mother of Kapiladev, who was the incarnation of Bhagavan. And her husband was Karadama Muni. And Karadama Muni was a great sage. Devahuti was the daughter of Svayambhuva Manu, who was the king of humanity. She was born in such wealth. And later on, after the child was born, Kardama Muni decided to leave the world and become a renunciate and go into the forest. And he left her alone with her child. And Devahuti, she approached Kapila Muni and began to inquire. She said, "I'm suffering. This world is full of illusions. I'm trapped by this body and this mind and all the limitations. Please tell me, what is the goal of life? How I can achieve real happiness and real perfection?" And Kapila Muni explained how valuable this human existence is. "And the most valuable thing you have in your life is not your money, not your gold and your jewels, not your PhDs or MAs, not your influence and your prestige. The most valuable thing you have in this human form of life is every moment that can be utilized to achieve, to progress towards self-realization. And if you waste those moments, you lose the greatest wealth you have. Because the clock continues to be ticking. Time and tide wait for no man. At every moment, our life is being consumed by the power of time. And we should know that. When we're little tiny children, we're thinking, when will I grow up so I can do what I like? Now I have to do what my parents like. We all were thinking like that at one time. I have to go to school, but I do not like to go to school. When I grow up, then I can do what I want to do. So children are always wanting to grow up. But then when they grow up, they're not allowed to do what they want to do. They can do what they want to do to some extent, but they have so many responsibilities and so many necessities and so many pressures. And then they start thinking, "I wish I was a child again." Children are so happy, they're just playing, they don't have to worry about bills, they don't have to worry about political changes, they don't have to worry about all kinds of social difficulties. They're just playing. So the children want to be grown up, and the grown-ups want to be children. So who's happy? Huh? Everyone is wanting something else, But the fact is, once you grow up, you cannot go back down again. And then you start getting old, and the hair begins to turn gray, and the teeth become loose, and the breathing becomes more difficult, and your endurance and your stamina and your memory, everything starts dwindling. And every day you're getting older and older and older. And you can try to make so many nice arrangements. I remember I met one lady. She was considered one of the greatest authorities on health. And she was really healthy. A few years ago, I actually had a conversation with her in her international institute. And it was three stories of stairs to get to the top floor. And we were speaking for about an hour. And then someone who was being treated by her had to leave. And they had big luggage. Big bags of luggage. And she was just so enthusiastic that she wanted to help that because the person was too sick. The person was about 40 years old, 45 years old, and was just too sick to carry the luggage. She was 87. And she picked up these two big pieces of luggage, which I could hardly pick up one of them. And she's half my size and half my weight, probably. And she ran down the steps with these two big pieces of luggage. She ran. And I was trying to, I was trying to help her, and I could not keep up with her. And then she ran up and got two more pieces of luggage. She went down and then ran up and two more, six pieces of luggage. Three flights of stairs, running. And she wasn't even tired. And she was 87 years old. Because she just eats all these natural foods and all these chlorophylls. And she's a master. She wrote so many books and so many people. She cured people of cancer. She cured people of all sorts of heart diseases. And she was considered very miraculous, but very practical. But last year she died. No matter how healthy you are, you're going to die. It's just a matter of time. No doubt we should try to keep our health, because while we have our life, we should make the best of it. But it doesn't last very long. We should know. And once she's dead, it really doesn't matter whether she was healthy or not healthy. Nobody will discriminate. Nobody will look at the corpse and say, oh, her cells are full of chlorophyll. She's a dead corpse. Whether you're eating sugar all your life, or whether you're drinking wheatgrass all your life, when you die, you're dead. There's really no difference. Our Guru Maharaj explained that when there was wars between Pakistan and India, and there was riots in the cities between the Muslims and the Hindus, there were so many thousands of people killed. And after they were all killed, what to do with all these dead bodies? They just put them all in fires. Nobody discriminated who's a Muslim or who's a Hindu. You couldn't even tell. Once you're dead, you're dead. So it is just a matter of time. The real education is to understand how, during the limited amount of minutes and seconds that we have to live in this world, we live in such a way that we liberate this soul from sufferings forever, that we make progress toward the ultimate joy of God realization. And while we have the power to breathe, the power to see, the power to speak, the power to live in this particular form of life, how can I do the best for my children, for my family, and for society, for nation, and for all living beings? These are the real questions that we should be asking in our life. How we can perfect our own life and how we can do the greatest good for others. And this is the subject matter of Bhagavad Gita. Real civilized humanity should study this great work and live by its teachings. And then we can actually make real, real strides of progress toward true prosperity, spiritual prosperity. Thank you very much. Is there any questions that anyone may have? If there's any questions, I can try to answer. There are three modes of material nature: sattva-guna, rajaguna, tamaguna. And these three modes of material nature are always influencing us to think and behave in various ways. When we are under the influence of ignorance, tamaguna, we may act very lazy. We don't want to do our duty, we become lethargic. We are inclined toward intoxication. Sometimes we become cruel and violent. When we come under the influence of rajaguna, we become very passionate. We want all sorts of enjoyment, enjoyment for the tongue, enjoyment of sex, enjoyment of hearing so many sounds and seeing so many sights. We want more and more and more money, more and more power. Why? So we can enjoy a greater degree. And when we come under the influence of sattva-guna, we become very charitable toward others. We become very kind, concerned with people's welfare. We want to live a very pious life. But Krishna tells us in Gita, "Trigunya vishaya veda nistriguna bhavartu." You should go beyond these three modes of nature. Go beyond these three gunas. Because they are all keeping us in bondage. And how to go beyond, Krishna explains, sarva dharman parityajya mam ekam sharanam brij. Aham tvam sarva papevyo mokshayi shamimasya. By surrendering to the will of the Supreme. Krishna says, abandon all varieties of dharma and surrender to me. I shall protect you from all the sinful reactions of all your previous births. And I will give you real pleasure, real joy, and eternal life. We have nothing to fear. And how to surrender to Krishna? According to the Shastras, Harinama, 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 Eva Kevalam, Kalo Nasteva, Nasteva, Nasteva Gatiram, Kali Kale, Nam Rupe, Krishna Vatam. In this age of Kali Yuga, Krishna has descended in the beautiful sound of his name. All the power, glory, beauty, and sweetness of Krishna is within the name of Krishna. In fact, all the various names of God are none different than the Supreme Godhead. And by chanting the holy name of God, we fulfill the true purpose of our life, to purify our minds, to cleanse our hearts, to become free from exploitative attachments in this world, to awaken our natural, compassionate, loving nature, our godly nature. The chanting of the holy names of the Lord is meant to purify the heart. The purpose of human life is to purify the heart. And in this age of Kali Yuga, such purification has been made so easy. Everyone and anyone can take the name of God. Whether we are man or woman, whether we are old or young, whether we are rich or poor, whether we are sannyasis or brahmacharis or grihastas, whether we are Americans or Europeans or Asians or Africans. These are all temporary designations. All the problems in this world are due to identity with this body. All the wars in this world are due to identity of this body. All the poverty and disease in this world is due to the identity of the body. We are not Africans or Americans or Russians or Indians. We are all eternally part of God. We are all brothers and sisters in Krishna. Aham bija pratapita. We must purify ourselves from all these sarvopadi nivyanapna, sarvopadi, all these upadis, all these mistakes in our thinking, these unwanted designations. They are all cleansed, they are all purified when we come in contact with the all pure name of the Lord. So therefore, Lord Chaitanya, the Yuga avatar of this age, came to teach us this simple meditation, the most profound and powerful of all meditation, meditation on the name of God. And because our tendency is to go outward so much, and factually, even the greatest yogis, I lived in the Himalayas, very rarely do you find even the greatest persons involved in trance and samadhi can restrain from going outward. And when they go outward, they usually become entangled and bewildered. But in this process of Nam Kirtan, the name is being concentrated within, and it is also coming to us from without when we are in the association of others and everyone is chanting. In this name, in this way, our consciousness is surrounded by the all-pure sound vibration of God's name. And therefore, it is the most powerful and recommended aid process, according to the Vedic scriptures, for cleansing our heart and reawakening our original spiritual consciousness. So at this time, I would like to invite everyone to very sincerely and wholeheartedly participate in this beautiful meditation on Krishna's holy name. And I will teach you how Lord Chaitanya particularly taught us how to chant Krishna's name. There are basically two processes. One is individual private chanting, where we sit and within our mind, and it is very helpful to use the japa mala, we chant the holy names in such a way that we individually, personally absorb our consciousness in bathing in the shelter of the purifying vibration of Harinam. And the other is kirtan, which creates the most wonderful social atmosphere, which brings people together in harmony, and which not only cleanses our own heart, but cleanses the whole society. And that is when we come together to chant loudly Krishna's name. There are so many sound vibrations polluting the atmosphere. On the street there are so many horns. Especially in India. People from the West cannot understand, what is this country, India? Everyone is pushing their horns. If you go to the West, if you push your horn, people become offended. They become insulted. Why you have done like this? You go, they practically come to beat you if you push the horn. It's an aparad. Driver aparad. But here in India, everyone's pushing horns. In fact, on the back of trucks, I see signs, sound horn. It's considered a glorification or something. People feel like you're glorifying them when you go, Anyways, some cultural differences we do not understand so much. But it's just all noise. And so many cinema songs. And so many people speaking all kinds of gossip and rumors and political katha and everything else. The atmosphere is polluted by sound. But Krishna's name can pierce through all that, neutralize it, and actually spiritualize society. And this is the greatest charity, to spiritualize people's hearts. People are starving in the streets, but practically the whole society is starving within their hearts. They are lonely. They want love. They want happiness, but they're starving. The rich, the poor, everyone. We should feed people prasad if we have the means to feed people prasad. But the most important way to feed people is to feed people's hearts. Because if your heart is full, you will fill everyone else's hearts, and you will fill everyone else's bellies, you will fill everybody, because you will have love. So let us fill our own hearts and the hearts of the world with Krishna's love, with the joy of spiritual happiness by participating in this wonderful gift of Hari Kirtan. As I'm chanting, everyone put your hands together like this, please. It is a social custom that we say namaskar or namaste. And very few people really mean it. Namaste means I bow down to you, does it not? But usually we don't bow down to each other. We're just, it means something like hello. Hello means, it means, I know the first part of it is hell. And then oh. Very humble when they say, oh hell, hello. But India has culture. Namaskar. I bow down to you. I humble myself before you. This is culture. And who is the most respectable person? Bhagwan. And Bhagwan has come. He has descended in his name. Golokera Premadana Harinam Sankirtan. So when we hear the holy name, we are welcoming Krishna into our ears and into our hearts. So we offer our pranams. Welcome, Krishna, into me. I am praying to you. Please come into my heart. You are welcome. And we should hear the holy name with great attention. And then when we chant, we should chant the syllables of the holy name very, very attentively, with great concentration, with great feeling. And Lord Chaitanya taught us we should raise our arms like this. Everyone, please go like this. In the sense that as we are chanting Krishna's names, we are offering our life at the lotus feet of Krishna in his name. Krishna says, sarva dharmam purityasya. We are surrendering to Krishna in his name. When Draupadi was trying to hold on to her sari as it was being pulled, ultimately she tried, and she was a very determined lady, no doubt. She had great powers, but when she was holding that sari, she understood that there were powers beyond her that were trying to corrupt her. And similarly, however great we are, however intelligent, however wealthy, however influential, there are powers in this world beyond us. And we should follow in the footsteps of Draupadi and lift our arms and cry out, Krishna, only you can save me. We must do everything within our power to perform our duty correctly, but ultimately we must know that only Krishna can save us. God helps those who help themselves. We must help ourselves, but in God consciousness. Krishna taught Arjuna, you fight. But if it was just a matter of work is worship, he wouldn't speak 700 verses. He would just say, fight, it's your duty. All the 700 slokas of Bhagavad Gita is to teach Arjuna in what consciousness to fight, in what consciousness to do your work, in consciousness of devotion to God, of dependence in God, of knowledge of our relationship with God. And as we address the holy name, we should do it in a mood of submission and surrender by raising our arms like this. So at this time, everyone please stand and we will chant.